Joel Brodsky is on the phone. If you are not from Chicago, you're listening in other states, maybe you're aware of the story, maybe you're not, but it was national, if not international news at the time that it happened when he represented Drew Peterson, who was convicted of killing his second wife, even though his third wife is still missing. Joel, do you ever regret representing Drew Peterson?
By the way, it was his third wife that was convicted of murdering, and his fourth wife that's missing. But
that's right.
I mean, I've represented, it's over 37 years, I represented lots of pretty horrible people and then also lots of innocent people. It's but that's what criminal defense lawyers do. You know, we represent both the innocent and guilty. So
was there at any point that you thought
defense.
Did you think at any point, like when you first took the case, did you think there was a chance he might be innocent?
Well, I didn't, you know, I really try not to get into guilt or innocent. I looked at if there was any proof, if there was any evidence of guilt, because, you know, I wasn't there. I don't know what happened, really. I can only look at what the evidence is. I didn't think there was a lot of evidence, but the Will County State Attorney's Office put together a pretty massive case. I mean, people forget. They always talk about the hearsay. But with Drew, there was, I think the state put on 87 witnesses. Only 9 of them were hearsay witnesses. There were hundreds of pieces of evidence. I mean, they put together a pretty strong case. A circumstantial case, but a very strong one. After time, there was plenty of evidence to show his guilt. I mean, the jury was out only 2 days, or day and a half, really. So in a case of that nature, that's pretty short. So there was plenty of evidence.
What made you sit down with our friends at WGN-TV and start to talk about this?
Well, yeah, that's kind of interesting. I had seen that Ben Bradley had done a piece on why it was taking so long to get a trial date for Alderman Burke, Eddie Burke. You know, 3 years is between indictment and trial in federal court is almost unheard of. In fact, it's probably close to being unprecedented. And I contacted Ben, and I said, you know, Ben, you're also missing a large part of the story here, because not only has he not going to trial yet, but he's still practicing law. His license hasn't been suspended. In fact, there hasn't even been a disciplinary complaint filed against him, even though he's been indicted for basically extorting people to enforcing them to hire his law firm to do their real estate tax work in exchange for getting legislation ordinances passed by the city council, you know, zoning ordinances that make very important stuff or lucrative stuff. And, that the person who runs the disciplinary commission, who's in charge of it, is his wife, who is, they've been married 40 years. So the money he makes because his license is still intact or not even a complaint filed, you know, goes into their joint household. And that's a conflict of interest. And she hasn't recused herself. She hasn't appointed a special prosecutor, you know, even though there's this really in your face financial conflicts of interest.
But Joel,
let me just fill everybody in 1 second here. He's talking about Chicago Alderman Ed Burke, whose wife is Ann Burke. She's a justice on the Illinois Supreme Court. And go ahead, Steve.
Well, I get what you're saying, Joel, but she's not, it's not her fault or it's not her clout that's keeping a complaint from being filed, correct?
No, yeah, well, she's in charge. You have to understand that the disciplinary commission is a branch of the Supreme Court. It's not independent. They hire, they fire, you know, they appoint the administrator or not, you know, they instruct them what to do and what to not to do. So, you know, am I saying that I could probably find a smoking gun email or something like on Hunter Biden's laptop?
Well, but if you were an attorney in good standing, could you file a complaint against him and then it would be heard?
No. Only the commission. Only the commission can do that, and they have to. There's a process, but it doesn't get started until the decision is made by the administrator to do that. So you know, it's a direct line. If she hires the administrator, the administrator starts it. And this is what's strange is that, you know, they've done plenty of other cases, you know, for where they've suspended people who are interim suspensions of people who have been indicted. But for some reason, neither Ed Burke or Mike Madigan have had any action taken against them, even though, you know, when you're indicted, there's a finding by a grand jury or a court that there's probable cause to believe that you committed the offense, and there's evidence on, you know, at the hearings out there to prove it. So, and that they haven't even filed their complaint is what's, very troubling, you know. And that's why, you know, when you talk about conflicts of interest at law, you talk about, the appearance of impropriety. So whether or not there was actual impropriety, you know, unless I guess they've gotten to their private conversation, it'd be hard to know. But certainly there's the appearance of impropriety. I mean, you know, one person's the person in charge is financially benefiting. That at least gives the appearance of impropriety, and they should, appoint a special prosecutor or recuse yourself or take yourself out of the loop.
Okay, so let me get back to that. So you saw Ben Bradley story, and you were like, man, that makes me mad because they did not get the sanctions that I was served, and I want to know why that is. So that prompted you to call Ben Bradley. And, of course, if he's going to sit down with you, he's going to ask about Drew Peterson and Stacey Peterson, and that's how this whole thing popped into the media?
Well, it didn't make me mad. I wanted to contact Ben and tell him he was missing that part of the story.
Okay, but
yeah, obviously, when he sat down with me, of course, you know, the Drew Peterson case, came up.
Okay, but Joel, so we watched it this morning and we've heard the tape, and you said that you're thinking about revealing the secrets that Drew Peterson told you. Why don't you just do it? I mean, why do you talk about maybe doing it? If you think you should do it, let's do it.
Well, I've been thinking, though. It's not that I just came up with, and like same thing with Burke. It's something that's been on my mind for over a year, and the same thing with Drew, or this, whether or not Stacey, I should talk about what I know. And that's because what really started was with Drew filed this about 6-8 months ago, a petition to set aside his conviction. It's called a post-conviction, even though his conviction has been affirmed like 4 different times by 4 courts, appellate and regular. And and then he goes on national TV and blames, everybody else but himself, including especially me, for the fact that he was convicted and alleges all sorts of things that aren't true. And that's when I started thinking that
you imply that you know where her body is. Do you know where her body is?
Well, I'm not going to say right now that I know where her body is, but I do know where she is. Yeah.
Explain that for me. So you know where, should she be alive or dead? You know where that is, where her body, where her person is located.
Yes.
Where is it?
I'm not going to say right now. I haven't. You know, and this is something else that. I know Cassandra, that's Stacey's sister, who's, I would say a friendly relationship. I talk with every once in a while. And, you know, one of the things that that Cassandra doesn't really like is that her sister's, all we know about her sister is that she's missing. That's all we know. But, you know, her point is that Stacey is so much more than just a victim. You know, she lived, with the kids, she had 2 kids. She had a very hard life. She struggled a lot. You know, she had accomplishment things. But all the people know about her is that she's missing.
Well, I mean, so, but you're coming forward. I know we're running out of
so much more.
We're short on time here, but you're coming forward saying you know where she is. How is that serving the family if for you to say that and not tell them? I mean, go ahead.
What I'm thinking of doing, I'm certainly very seriously considering that. You know, people will say, well, you're violating attorney-client privilege, but that's not, that's not exactly true, because when a former client comes out and lies about you and makes accusations about you about things that aren't true, saying, I'm innocent, but the only reason I got convicted is because of Brodsky, I can defend myself. He waives your attorney-client privilege. I can say, no, that's false, and so I don't think I'm waiving the privilege.
Okay, hang on a second. Joel, I know you're going to stick with us, so I want you to hang on to that thought and stick with us through the news. I'm going to toss it over to Steve so he can do the news. We'll come back. Joel Brodsky, the former attorney for Drew Peterson, is on Chicago's Afternoon News and, you know, willing to share his opinion of what is happening. And we've got a few more questions to shoot his way. News is next on 720 WGN. On the phone is Joel Brodsky, the former lawyer for Drew Peterson, convicted of killing wife number three. Wife number four, Stacey Peterson, is the one who thrust him into the news. That is the person we have all been worried about and wondering. We all assume that she is no longer living. And you were talking about her sister, Cassandra, and you said that you had a somewhat amicable relationship with her, Joel. Has she directly asked you where Stacey is?
She has. But it's more than that. Which I believe she wants, and what I want is just the Stacey be seen as more than just a victim. Because, you know, if somehow I just the question of where she is resolved, and then case closed, everybody goes on. You know, the media loses its attention, and the case goes on. Then nothing about her life, her story, will not be told. And it is.
It's not being told now. So I mean, if she was found. That would prompt people to tell her story and celebrate her life.
No, I think that everybody would just close it and move on. So I pretty much decided that I'm going to do this. The only question in my mind is how, in a way that the whole story is told. Yeah, and there is quite a story here.
Is that through a book or a movie?
I don't know. Well, maybe a book. A book is one option. I don't see a movie. Maybe a podcast. I don't know. But that's the only thing that really I'm thinking about, is how to do it so that the whole story comes out. And that, I think, is something that will happen relatively soon.
Joel, I don't understand.
I'm thinking about.
I don't understand how you can express concern for Stacey's sister and talk about your relationship with her while you are sitting on this knowledge of where Stacey Peterson is, be she dead or alive. I'm no lawyer, but it seems to me. Let me finish my point, though. I'm no lawyer, but it seems to me you've already waived your privilege when you've come out and told us that you know where she is. That reveals that Drew Peterson told you where she is, and you've shared that with the public.
Well, I know where she is. I haven't said what or where, but I think, first of all, Cassandra knows the answer to the question of what happened with her sister. But like her, and this is something that her and I have talked about, is that, you know, that Stacey be seen as something more than just a victim and a what done it and a who done it, that the whole story be told. You know, and
who's going to tell that story? Is it going to be you or is it going to be Cassandra?
Well, I think it'll be everybody involved, myself, Cassandra, the investigating police officers.
Have you already started a podcast?
No, I haven't. I mean, that's something that I was thinking about. I haven't decided on how. That's the thing I've been thinking about.
Would the profits go to Stacey's children?
You're assuming there would be profits.
Well.
I guess something I really haven't thought of. I haven't really taken much consideration about as far as profits. That's, you know, I'm not exactly starving, so. You know, it's a question of how so that it's done in a way that she's just not seen as the end product of what happened, and then everybody moves on. That her whole life story, including the part where Drew got involved, which is, you know, when the two children, and that her children know about, who were very young at the time she disappeared, know how their mother was, who she was, all these things come out, you know, in a way that people listen to. You know, not that it's just like there's one big event.
I think there are a lot of people in this city, tons of people in the city of Chicago, believe she's in a blue barrel at the bottom of the canal. That's what most people think in this city.
Joel, there are two things here. I get that. Let's learn about her life in its entirety. I get that. But there are a lot of people, loved ones, who are trying to put this behind them, or at least get some, I hate the word, closure to this. And you're claiming to know the answer, and you're not sharing it with them.
Well, it's not that I'm ignoring them. I've talked to Cassandra. You know, I talked to the police officer. In fact, the head lead detective, who just retired, tells me that the only unsolved case he has from his whole career, his three-decade career, is Stacey Peterson, and he'd like to see it resolved. And I've spoken with him about it. So it's not that I'm ignoring anybody.
But have you told Cassandra the resolution to this?
That's what,
where her sister is?
No, I haven't told her where, but she's aware of. I think she's aware of what
happened
to her sister.
Well, what is it that happened? What happened?
Does she believe, like the rest of us believe, that she's in that blue barrel? Is that what she believes?
Well, I can tell you that there's no blue barrel. I don't know. I don't even know where that came from, by the way. But
that's what most people thought. You went, yeah.
Well, I know that's what people thought, but the blue barrel thing, it was some invention of maybe Greta Van Susteren or somebody, but it has nothing to do with reality. But the point I'm trying to make is the how. Now, and that's the only thing I'm struggling with, and once I come to a conclusion on that, things will move very quickly, and I don't expect that to be very long from now either. So, that's kind of where we're at. Just want to do it in a way that makes sure everybody's concerns and Cassandra's, concerns about her sister's story being told, that her children, who are very little now, but are teenagers now, are very little then, not teenagers now, learn all about their mother. I mean, I've seen, for example, Stacy's guardianship file after her mother left and her father was basically, non-existent. And, what happened to her during that period, how she was taken care of, why she got involved with Drew, how Drew treated her over all those years.
Joel, I credit myself as being a listener, and you seem to be very fidgety or moving around or somewhat nervous. So
pace when I talk.
Yeah, I could tell. You were definitely pacing.
And that's just my style.
That's the lawyer in you. We only have a minute left. So two quick questions. Do you already have a book laid out or a podcast laid out?
I have all the information, but I haven't laid anything out because I haven't made the decision on how.
Okay. You've made decision to do it, and you think that will be sometime in the near future. What does near future mean to you?
Months.
Okay. And you will do it in cooperation with her sister?
Of course. And other people who are involved, like the state police officers who spent the last decade trying to deal with this and were unable to. They want to know everything is very, very badly. And, the state's attorney's office, they want to eat everybody that's interested. Yes.
All those people walk through Chicago pretty easily. What kind of reaction do you get when you walk down Michigan Avenue? People still recognize you?
So those that do are very friendly. I've never had any problems in Chicago. It's a friendly town. People here are great.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us.
People that remember, I represent a lot. I represent a lot of people other than Drew, and I got an exoneration for a guy that was 29 years in prison for a crime he didn't commit because he was a John Burge victim. I got him exonerated. I represented Officer Robert Rialmo, who. He was found not guilty in an officer involved shooting. So a lot of other cases other than Drew's, and most people remember those two. So
right. And if you just I've got to go, but if you were to reveal what you know to break that attorney client privilege, would that put other cases in jeopardy?
No, not at all.
Okay.
I mean, Drew. Remember, he's in jail, he's never getting out. He's got two murder, a murder conviction, and took out a hit on the state's attorneys. He's there until he dies. So, and there's no death penalty in Illinois, so nothing I ever say could hurt him. So, that's not something I wouldn't put somebody else in jeopardy. No.
Thank you for joining us on Chicago's Afternoon News.